Have you just found out that you need to have radiotherapy? Do you want to know how it works or why you need it in the first place? Maybe you're concerned about the side effects. Well, today I'm going to answer all your questions about radiotherapy with this week's experts, Joe and Naman, the two therapeutic radiographers behind the award-winning podcast, Rad Chat. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. Now, I've got a guilty secret. Even though I used to be a breast surgeon and most of my patients needed radiotherapy, I had no idea what a radiotherapy machine actually looked like. I didn't really know what the side effects were until I ended up on the table having it myself. Now, I had so many questions, and I know I'm not alone, as over 70 of you have sent in your own questions and voice notes. And today, I'm thrilled to have Joe and Naman on the show to help me answer them for you. They're therapeutic radiographers who set up a multi-award-winning, internationally renowned oncology podcast in their spare time, just to help people like you understand what's happening. Joe and Naman, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi Liz. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming on. Now, before we dive into the questions, can you tell me how you two met and what led you to start up the Rad Chat podcast?
So we worked together for a charity called Radiotherapy UK virtually during the COVID pandemic. And then Joe actually came on the podcast before as a guest when it was a different podcast. And then ever since then, we've not been able to get rid of each other. And I think we talk to each other more than anyone else we know.
I love it. And I want to say, if you've got more questions about radiotherapy after listening to this show, please go and check out the Rad Chat podcast. But let's crack on with the questions. Bike to the Shop on Instagram asked, how does radiotherapy kill cancer cells and not normal cells? So Joe, can you tell us what radiotherapy is and how it works?
Yeah, so radiotherapy is the use of really high ionizing radiation in the form of x-rays. So, you know, a lot of people know about x-rays when they go to A&E maybe to go and have a plain film x-ray if maybe they've broken a bone or there's a suspected broken bone. So a diagnostic radiographer would take that x-ray, but they don't use the kind of high powerful x-rays that we get to use as therapeutic radiographers. Radiotherapy can sometimes be referred to as external beam radiotherapy. And it's also worth noting that there are other forms of radiation treatment that can also be classed as radiotherapy. So there's like brachytherapy, stereotactic radiosurgery, and also proton therapy as well. So essentially, you know, when you're, not that I would ever advocate that you do this, but I know that patients will kind of go on to Google and look at radiotherapy. It's just to make sure that you are looking at the right type of radiation treatment. And it's worth noting that radiotherapy isn't offered at every single oncology centre because it's highly specialised and because the equipment, the software, the workforce is so specialised. We have specific radiotherapy departments around the country. So a lot of our patients, you know, one of the questions they ask is, why do I have to travel so far to get to radiotherapy? That's the reason why, is because it is so highly specialized. And then in terms of kind of why it works, is it essentially uses those high powerful x-rays to pass through the body. Now, a lot of people have the misconception that radiotherapy stays within our body, so we're radioactive. That's not the case at all. With radiotherapy, it passes straight through. And as the x-rays pass through the body, it has contact with the cells and it will actively damage those cells. What we do as therapeutic radiographers is manipulate the radiotherapy as much as we possibly can do to minimize those x-rays coming into contact with our normal healthy cells, whilst also trying to extrapolate the radiation beams to target where the cancer is or where it was if you've had surgery and or chemotherapy. So all of our cells in our body have what we call a tolerance dose to radiation. So, you know, we can give radiation without causing harm. And we just have to be really careful at kind of manipulating that as much as possible. But the radiation will damage our normal healthy cells as well as our cancer cells. And thankfully, our normal healthy cells are able to repair themselves or repopulate, whereas the cancer cells aren't able to do that. So there is some radiobiology that goes into kind of how radiotherapy works. And I won't bore you because I think the audience would drop off, Liz. But in terms of kind of how it works, essentially the X-rays will damage the DNA itself, or what it can do is create free radicals from the water in cells. And that's what then goes on to damage the DNA and stops that cell from repairing. So that's essentially what radiotherapy is and how it works in a simplistic format.
Brilliant. Thank you. Now, Sarah and Liz want to know, how do you prepare for radiotherapy and what should they expect?
So what our patients will typically do is get referred for their radiotherapy, and they would then see a consultant oncologist who has also specialism in radiotherapy, and they would often do a consent. The next appointment, or at that same appointment, patients then may go through the pre-treatment planning process. So that is essentially a CT scan. So the CT scan is what we do to ensure that we have the data of everything in that area where we're wanting to treat that will then get sent to the planning staff. And they would then create that very complex radiotherapy treatment plan. And that can usually take about 2 weeks. So a lot of patients ask us at RadChat why there is a gap between that initial consultation and the pre-treatment CT scan and then actually starting treatment. And, you know, it can take longer, it can take less, but traditionally it's about 2 weeks in between the pre-treatment planning scan and then starting treatment. For treatment itself, you would go into what we call a maze. It sounds like a weird, complex kind of something you'd find in a National Trust house, but I promise you it's not as nice as that. But it's essentially a corridor where there are some turnings. And the reason for that is radiation safety. So, you know, because we're using such powerful X-rays, once they pass through the body, they then could potentially pass through and bounce off of the walls and continue to do that until they left the room. So what we need to do is give those X-rays lots of walls to bounce off of so that they lose their energy and dissipate. And so that's why you have a maze. So you walk down that long treatment maze and then you would come into the radiotherapy treatment room, and it is not unheard of to hear a slight gasp from patients. It can feel quite scary. The machine looks absolutely massive. You know, even if you've seen some of the images that we've posted or that you, Liz, have shared, it can still be quite a daunting prospect going into a radiotherapy treatment room. It's often cold. And so, you know, Liz, you give amazing advice. And I now pass that advice on to all of our patients that I speak to, but about wearing a hat or potentially wearing gloves on your hands to keep you as warm as possible.
I think I cut a pair of woolly thermal tights up and put them on my hands.
Yeah, amazing, amazing tip to just keep yourself warm and comfortable. And then what we do is we get you in exactly the same position as you were in for your pre-treatment CT scan. And then we would leave the room to deliver your radiotherapy treatment. At that point, you'll hear some noises, some whirring. You know, you shouldn't feel anything, but some patients do report that they feel a slight warming or a slight tingling, whereas others, it's just like a normal X-ray. They don't feel anything. Sometimes you'll see things and that will just be the equipment passing overhead. And then after your treatment, that's when you'd then get off the couch. They'd check to make sure you're okay, how you're coping with treatment, and then you'd go home. And then the other part of the question was how to prepare. Smoking cessation. There is amazing support available for patients to try and help and support them to give up smoking. But for radiotherapy specifically, and I know obviously for surgery, reducing smoking, stopping smoking is the single most important thing you can do for your health. And I'm very fortunate. I've never been a smoker and addicted to cigarettes. So I have no idea of how hard that may be. But we absolutely know that as therapeutic radiographers, how patients smoking, their skin reaction appears worse. you know, their side effects from treatment appear much worse. So, you know, stopping smoking will really positively affect you whilst you're on treatment. The other thing is around nutrition. So increasing protein, increasing your fruit and vegetables, having a really balanced, healthy diet. We do have some weird and wonderful things that people come to us and say, oh, you know, I'm considering fasting whilst I'm having radiotherapy. And we would strongly discourage any kind of severe diet changes whilst you're having radiotherapy. Largely from a weight loss perspective, we don't want our patients to lose weight. It affects our radiotherapy treatment planning that we've spent weeks preparing. So changing your diet is definitely not advocated whilst you're on treatment at all. But increasing your protein can really help with repair and repopulation of those cells. Keeping hydrated, you know, being hydrated means there's lots of water in our cells. So that is a real kind of benefit, and something that we really advocate is that you are well hydrated throughout your treatment, and it will also help with side effects and skincare. And then the other thing is physical activity, which I know, Liz, you could probably direct all your listeners to lots of other podcast episodes.
We're going to come on to that later, so I'm going to save that one for later.
Perfect. So that they're kind of some simple things that potentially you could do.
Thanks, Jo. That was really helpful. But let's move on to why we use radiotherapy. I'm going to start with a voice note sent in by Stevie Wise.
Hi, Liz. I have a question about radiotherapy. I'll give you a bit of background about me in case it's useful. I'm 37. Before my mastectomy and lymph node clearance, I had 2 grade 3 tumours and I had cancer in 3 of my lymph nodes. My cancer is hormone positive and HER2 negative. I had no extracapsular spread in my lymph nodes. My breast surgeons referred me to oncology for chemotherapy and has said that it's highly likely that I'll also have radiotherapy. I wasn't expecting radiotherapy because I only had 3 lymph nodes involved with no extracapsular spread. And my plastic surgeon said that this might be because I'm young and I can just take it, essentially. So my question is, why do some people get radiotherapy and not others when they're in the similar situation? Is it to do with age? Is it something else? Is the radiotherapy strictly necessary?
Can I ask, Liz, have you ever said that to a patient before? It's because you're young?
Never. I can't believe anybody would say that. It's bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, radiotherapy can be used for quite a few different things, and usually after a mastectomy and if there's nodal involvement, we would offer radiotherapy, as far as my knowledge goes. So yeah, I'd find it a bit strange if they weren't offered it, because even if they were fully clear, we'd want to make sure there was no microscopic scale cells that we've missed. And if there are lymph node involvement, we would normally tackle it with some radiotherapy as well afterwards.
And I think sometimes you don't know the full results until you've operated. So normal lymph nodes on a scan may suddenly be positive, a cancer may be larger than it is, and both those factors are an indication for radiotherapy. So we had a question from Shikana, who wanted to know why she needs radiotherapy after having chemotherapy and a lumpectomy. Surely the cancer's all gone and there's nothing left to treat.
So yes, after a lumpectomy, or what's called a breast-conserving surgery technique, we might treat the whole breast or a partial breast, depending on someone's risk factors. It is quite common to have radiotherapy, even if you might be clear of cancer within that area. So we're often known as belts and braces or the insurance policy. And it's just to make sure that we reduce that risk of things coming back. And again, if there are any microscopic scale cells that have been there, we just tackle them with the radiotherapy quickly afterwards.
And so having a lumpectomy and radiotherapy gives you the same results as a mastectomy, doesn't it, if it's a small cancer? And that's why we do it. Thank you very much. But the next question is from Nikki Ann, who sent us in this voice note.
Hi, so I've just literally completed chemotherapy yesterday, which is amazing, and I got to ring the bell. So now I know the op's coming, and then straight after that I'm into radiotherapy. So the biggest thing I worried about is when they check your lymph nodes, and if there is signs of cancer there or it was there, do they do radiotherapy on that site or do they only do it on your breast? As I'm not really sure. Thank you very much.
So I suppose to begin with, anyone who has a suspected malignancy in this area, they'll have something called a sentinel lymph node biopsy. And if that's negative, we wouldn't prescribe radiotherapy. But if there is nodal involvement, so you might see on your staging, it will say N2 or N3. It's quite an important part of it because it will be referring to the level of the lymph nodes where there has been some spread or evidence of something going on. And then that's where we would treat the radiotherapy as well as the whole breast, like the chest wall site. It's very rare that we would only treat the lymph nodes. And actually, that's not really something that would be seen for breast radiotherapy.
So I guess if you've only got one or two lymph nodes and there are only small amounts of cancer cells in them, we wouldn't treat them, we wouldn't do anything else after surgery. But if you've got quite a lot of nodes involved, we're now offering either radiotherapy to the armpit instead of surgery, and they both have an equal response. Is that right?
Yes. Usually following surgery, depending on exactly as you said, how it's gone, we will normally offer radiotherapy afterwards.
Brilliant. And then, Joe, I wanted to ask you, Annie, Alison and Susan all want to know, why does radiotherapy come after surgery and chemotherapy?
So chemotherapy is what we call a systemic treatment. So that's where the chemotherapy drugs go all the way through our body. However, radiotherapy is very localized. So only where the X-rays pass through is what's going to be affected. So therefore, having radiotherapy first would mean that any cells that are outside of the area would have time to proliferate or to divide and to grow. So chemotherapy is given first, which will go all over the body and then clear up any cells that exist. Whereas then having radiotherapy after that, you're having very localized treatment to the area where the actual tumor originated from.
That's such a great explanation. Thank you. Now, Karen wanted to ask, and this is something I thought about, how soon after surgery should you have radiotherapy for it to be effective? Hers was delayed several months and mine was delayed 3 months because of cording. And some people told Karen that it was pointless having radiotherapy because she'd had to wait too long.
Yeah, so it is really tricky at the moment because there are delays and we obviously appreciate that it's upsetting, it's distressing, and we are doing everything we possibly can do as a workforce to try and ensure that, you know, people get their treatment. Typically, people will have radiotherapy between 6 to 8 weeks after they've finished their chemotherapy or surgery. But we also know that in regards to effectiveness, there's no good data to suggest that delays in estrogen positive breast cancer is harmful. And obviously, a lot of our patients will have hormone therapy, which typically will kind of be an additional insurance gap. But obviously, when I say good data, that's sometimes hard as well, because what we would never do is a research project to look at people who have long delays, and we wouldn't replicate that. So there is research out there that says that actually you can have a delay of up to 20 weeks before there is any difference between kind of having radiotherapy or breast conserving surgery. So it's important to kind of stress that, you know, some patients will be waiting that length of time. However, that is different for people with triple negative or inflammatory types. And those patients are being prioritised.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Joe. And then Susan, Sammy and Memmy Girl wanted to know why some people have 3 weeks and some people have 5 days. We know that everything changed during COVID, but listeners who are only getting a week now wonder whether they're being undertreated. Joe, can you just explain what's been going on for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing I have to stress is that radiotherapy is highly personalised. So a lot of people, we see patients sitting in the waiting room chatting, going, well, I'm having 5 days and I'm having 15 days. Why is there a difference? And it's just to kind of make sure that everyone is aware that it is personalised based on you. So we always prescribe radiotherapy in a dose and what we call a fractionation. So that's the number of days that people have. Or potentially, you know, we do have sometimes where patients will have more than one treatment in a day. But the guidelines at the moment are that, you know, a lot of patients will have what we call 26 gray and 5 fractions, which is a week, which is kind of routine practice. However, there are some patients as well who are having surgery who then have 40 gray over 15 fractions. So it does vary. And also, I know we're going to talk a little bit about boosts later, but that also comes into play as well. So there are just different dose and fractionation regimes being offered depending on lots of different variables.
Brilliant. So anyone listening can relax and assume you're having the right treatment for you and your type of breast cancer.
Absolutely.
But let's move on to the side effects. And we had a voice note sent in from Nadine.
Hi, Dr. Liz. Nadine here. I had my radiotherapy 2 months after my surgery. It was delayed by a month because I developed a seroma. And I still have that now. I'm a couple of months further down the line from the radiotherapy. It all went well, apparently. but it is still very swollen, tender, and quite solid to feel. Just wanted to know if there's anything I could do, if I should be concerned about anything at all. Just, yeah, any advice greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Naman, can you help her?
Seromas are quite common post-surgery, as I'm sure Liz, you'll remember and know as well, very well.
Yes.
I personally would say it's not something to be worried about. And as Joe mentioned about the timings for when radiotherapy can start, it's okay. We normally wouldn't scan someone coming for radiotherapy treatment to their breast or chest area until the seroma had decreased in size, only because that pocket of fluid is movable inside that tissue. And once we scan you, we'd like the same internal anatomy, your external kind of contour, as we call it, your positioning to be the same every day. So we'd normally let the inflammation subside and go down. And I think one thing to point out is that even when people come back after the seroma has either been drained or it's subsided by itself, sometimes the radiotherapy towards the end of treatment or even a few weeks afterwards can cause some pockets of fluid to build up again in that seroma area. So that doesn't mean anything's got worse. It's just the radiotherapy is working. So the inflammation is pushing some of that fluid back into the area.
That's brilliant to know. Now, when I was having it, I was really worried about what would happen to my skin. And Coco and Anne wanted to know more. Why do we get burning of the skin? And is there anything you can do to reduce or prevent it?
We don't like to call it a burn.
But it's a scary word, isn't it, that a lot of people use?
I think historically, radiation has been known to burn in different aspects. And actually, again, as Joe mentioned about how advanced the technique is, have become, the skin sparing effect that we have from the machine means it isn't a burn. So a burn is where there'd be more of a central area of skin breakdown internally, so called necrosis. Whereas for us, we normally just treat the topmost layer of the skin, but that's where the skin reaction will happen. And it presents differently across different skin tones. So if you have white skin, it might be pink or red and then look tanned. For someone like me, so brown skin, it might go maroon, subtly darker than the surrounding area. For someone with pigmented skin or black skin, it could be different colour pigment changes, so purple, grey, yellow, sometimes maroon, but also darker than the surrounding area. The main thing is, exactly as Joe said earlier, smoking cessation. We know that 95% of all radiotherapy patients will get some form of skin change. Smoking can really increase that skin reaction. Keeping your skin hydrated, and then I suppose you could call it skin prehabilitation, but skin is really important, keeping it hydrated, keeping it moisturized, and that's on any basic moisturizer that you've used on your skin for however long. We don't necessarily want to introduce a new topical agent just before radiotherapy in case you have a reaction. There's also something to point out to your listeners, Liz, is there's a lot of different companies and has this and that for radiotherapy. There aren't that many products that are better than another, and the Society of Radiographers evidence stipulates that there is no cream that's better than another. So just be careful what you spend your money on, and just speak to us in radiotherapy about it.
Because you guys know everything. When I had questions, the radiographers were fantastic. Sorry, radiotherapists. No, therapeutic radiographers were wonderful at telling me, put this on your skin, don't put that. So just use what you always use that you don't react to, and just keep moisturizing and keep drinking water. Now, Mowgli Momo wanted to ask, and this is important, can you sunbathe after radiotherapy? Is it safe?
You can, but we would normally recommend that as soon as you finish radiotherapy, if you can, maybe it's up to 3 weeks, keep the area completely covered as best possible. And actually, while you're having radiotherapy or in the 3 weeks afterwards, don't put any form of sun cream in the area, just because the metallic elements can make the skin reaction a lot worse. After that, it needs to be factor 50 and above. And we would normally recommend for the rest of your life, factor 50 and above, keep the area covered. I've had patients who have wanted to go back to going on holiday, and that's completely fine. We want you to have your normal life again. But it's just to remember that if you're wearing a bikini or if you're going topless, that area will tan a lot quicker than the rest of the body. So you might notice that, similar to the end of the treatment where you've noticed a rectangle kind of shape that where we've treated, that will happen a lot quicker than it has before.
That's really good advice. Now, Nikki and Kelly said, is it normal to get breast pain and tightness during radiotherapy?
So yes. So radiotherapy causes all sorts of reactions, and it can inflame all the nerve endings, which essentially is what's causing that pain, the tingling, the numbness that lots of patients report. So it is important to talk to your therapeutic radiographers, your oncologist or your clinical nurse specialist about what you're experiencing, because it's always great to have that reassurance. but it is also normal that the radiotherapy is causing a lot of inflammation. It's causing a lot of changes within the body. And as a result of that, you may get lots of different sensations for weeks, months, and years afterwards. I think sometimes we play it down and, you know, therapeutic radiographers would love to say that in 2 or 3 weeks, you'll be back to normal. There is no normal. And so it's just to be aware that everyone is different. Everyone's reaction to radiotherapy is different. And unfortunately, you know, your healing time will be different as well.
Great. Thank you very much. I think it's really important to know what is normal because you often don't know what other people are going to look like during treatment. Now, one question that came up quite a lot is, can you work and can you exercise during treatment?
Absolutely. Do what you need or want to do. So we have patients who are running marathons whilst they're undergoing radiotherapy. There are other people who actually have been working all their lives and actually during radiotherapy, they are really struggling emotionally and physically, you know, and they choose not to work. They choose not to necessarily go out and socialise as they would usually. I think everyone has their own way of coping. The one thing I would say to everyone going through radiotherapy is typically it's one of the last cancer treatments that people will go through. And to just be aware that you have often gone through a huge amount in a very short space of time and actually it can catch up with you. You know, the fatigue, the pain, all the kind of side effects from surgery, all the side effects from chemo and then having radiotherapy. And Liz, you've described it perfectly on your podcast previously, but, you know, lying on a radiotherapy couch can be very lonely. It can be time to reflect. And actually, from an emotional perspective, don't be surprised if it hits you more during your radiotherapy treatment. And that might be the thing that makes you slow down, that makes you not necessarily want to work. And so everyone is different, but from a physiological perspective, you absolutely can work and you can exercise and we actively encourage it.
If you've had chemotherapy first and it's the end of almost a year of treatment and I was not prepared for just how tired I would feel. I did carry on exercising, but it's important if you've got a skin reaction and you're wearing a tight sports bra and you're getting sweaty in the gym, that might irritate it. So think of it as just gentle ticking over training and not really heavy lifting. There's time for that. So yes, exercise is also really important to help with fatigue. I know, Naman, you and I are passionate about talking about this, but just remember, your body needs to heal first. And that's the most important thing here. But whilst we're talking about the long-term side effects, we had an audio note from Margaret who sent us this.
Hi, Liz. I'm just wondering how long radiotherapy lasts in the body. I had radiotherapy in 2016 and wondered if it would still be working. Thanks for everything you do. Thank you.
Jo, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. So as I said, in terms of radiobiology, you don't actually have the radiotherapy in your body. It just passes straight through. But the effect of radiotherapy can be long term. So, you know, radiotherapy, unfortunately, is the gift that keeps on giving. And, you know, from a side effect perspective, we can sometimes see something called radiation fibrosis. And that can actually develop any time from 6 months to decades later. So, you know, there are changes that may still occur months, years later. And it's just something to kind of be aware of, really. And my piece of advice is always look at your consent form. We're awful. You know, I know myself when I've been for a operation or a medical, they give you the consent form and it typically goes in the back of a drawer or in the bin. Actually, the consent form is brilliant at kind of giving you your statistics of what is likely to happen. But also the doctor commonly will give you time frames and that can be really helpful as well. So take a look at those consent forms or keep them safe. And hopefully that should help you as well in terms of what you can expect afterwards.
Thank you. Now, you mentioned radiation fibrosis and Jackie and Running Jules had questions about this. Jules had fallen and broken a rib and wanted to know why it was taking so long to heal. And Jackie's had chronic pain in her ribs that no one can explain. But Dr. Google mentioned radiation fibrosis. Can you just tell us a bit about it and how it does affect the bones or the lungs or anything else about it?
Yeah, so radiation fibrosis is one of the main things that people can develop and is the reason for radiotherapy late effects. So it's essentially where the cells become disorganized, they lose their ability to contract, they don't have the same function that they had previously. And obviously that doesn't always happen straight away. That can happen over years and years and years of those cells undergoing reproduction, undergoing that mitotic cell division that the cells undergo. So it's just to be aware that that can happen. It is different for everyone and the variables are vast. So genetics comes into play, dose and fractionation come into play, where you've had treatment, all of that can actually affect whether radiation fibrosis occurs. But the listeners that have obviously written in, Liz, it does sound like radiation fibrosis might be the cause of that. And I would strongly encourage them to go to their GPs or their oncologists and mention radiation fibrosis. You know, even saying that can sometimes really help the healthcare professional.
Brilliant. Thank you. And does it get better if you have it?
No. So radiation fibrosis, unfortunately, is something that is really difficult to treat. But there are things that you can do to try and minimise it as much as possible. So the things that we talk about around physical activity, the exercises that maybe the physiotherapist give, good nutrition during your treatment, those kinds of things can help kind of ensure that your body is in a good condition to cope with radiation fibrosis. But unfortunately, radiation fibrosis doesn't have a treatment per se, although there are some amazing studies going on. But there's not a quick fix, unfortunately.
Thank you. Now, before I move on to the heart, because that's a topic close to my heart, we've had a couple of questions about the armpit and the shoulder. So Lexi Cairns noticed that she stopped sweating in that area, and I actually noticed that my hair doesn't grow anymore. And then Leslie sent us this voice note.
I had radiation 2 years ago now, and my shoulder is almost like a frozen shoulder. I don't know how to explain that. And lymph nodes removed as well. And so my arm is a bit sort of heavy. I don't have lymphedema, but is all that a side effect from the radiation? They seem to think it is, but I don't know. Should I get that checked out?
So the sweating and the hair loss and stiff shoulders, is that normal?
Yes. So that is as a consequence of the radiation damaging the normal cells. So obviously our sweat glands might be within the radiotherapy treatment field, and so that will be affected exactly the same as our hair follicles. So they are what we call rapidly dividing cells, and those cells are more affected by radiation. So any cells that undergo this proliferation quickly typically are affected for longer and maybe permanently. And so moving to the person who had the shoulder, yes, this is something we hear about a lot, and we would advocate that you do get a referral to a physiotherapist as soon as you possibly can do, and if you can start looking at what exercises you can do for a frozen shoulder, and so that you can start doing them at home, because I appreciate some of the delays in getting a physiotherapist appointment can be challenging at the moment. So please do. There are some amazing oncology physiotherapists on YouTube, which I'm sure Liz can link. But it would be amazing to try and get that treated as quickly as you possibly can do. And I know that Kat Tunnicliffe has done an Instagram live with you, Liz, and with us on RadChat for some amazing exercises that we advocate everyone does for life, because the surgery, the radiotherapy, and also the chemotherapy will impact on that shoulder. And so it's really important that we kind of develop that shoulder health as quickly as we possibly can do and maintain it for life.
I was about to say that, Jo. I had my leaflet for the shoulder exercises. I had a sentinel node biopsy, and then I had an axillary recurrence. And I stopped after 2 or 3 months because I was bored and didn't think I needed to. And then I got a really stiff shoulder. I got a frozen shoulder. And even now, almost 10 years on, I do my shoulder exercises every day, because if I don't, it gets really stiff and sore. So thank you. And again, there's so much more information on the Rad Chat and both our Instagram channels. And are there any other short or long-term side effects that we should mention that we haven't touched on already?
So maybe for the skin, there's something called telectantasia. Only 1% of patients would get it, but telectantasia is how I like to describe it, Liz, is I had a great-grandfather who used to smoke pipes. And on his skin surface, you could see lots of capillaries broken. And that is literally what it looks like. It's those broken capillaries that you often associate with someone who smokes very heavily. And it is permanent, and it is something that can affect the appearance of the skin surface. The other thing to mention is maybe fibrosis of the lung. So that's where, you know, the lung that we treat through to ensure that we're encompassing all of the breast tissue and also the chest wall, you know, that slither of lung can develop fibrosis and that can cause breathlessness, a cough. Sometimes it can be detected on X-ray. So someone might go for another diagnostic test and they go, oh, I'm a bit concerned about your lungs. That would then be a time for you to go, oh, I have had radiotherapy, because that can sometimes throw people off. And there's also something called brachial plexus neuropathy. So that's kind of like nerve damage, which can cause pain and numbness and tingling within that arm and shoulder. And obviously that is all of these things that I've mentioned are less than 1% of people will get them. But like anything, being well informed can really help patients advocate for themselves should they go on to develop anything like this in the future.
Brilliant. Thank you. And I think when you have cancer treatment, you are faced with lists and lists and lists of really, really scary side effects. And you think they're going to happen to you. You're going to get them all. People are talking about them online on Instagram. If someone's listening, if you're listening and you're about to have radiotherapy and you're feeling really, really scared, is there any advice that you would give them just to help them feel it's going to be okay, you'll get through this, you don't need to worry?
I think one thing that we advocate for, if possible, is with the radiotherapy treatment plan, if it can be shown to you. Sometimes it can really help visualize where we're treating, where you might have a side effect or you might not. Joe and I advocate for this quite a lot, and it's something that I still do within practice, is show the treatment plan. It's your body.
And by the treatment plan, do you mean like that 3D picture of the chest so you can see exactly where the radiotherapy rays are targeting?
Exactly. So sometimes the oncologist would prefer to go through this, but there are advanced practitioners or consultant therapeutic radiographers, as Joe said, who'd be confident in sharing as well.
That's really helpful. And Joe, would you say anything?
Yeah, I would say that the therapeutic radiographers are there to support you. So please do utilize them whilst you have them. But I would also say, if you are nervous, make sure they know, but think about how you can lessen those nerves as much as possible, because you will find it easier in the radiotherapy treatment room because you do have to lie nice and still. So think about, you know, is mindfulness going to work for you? Is, you know, listening to Bon Jovi on the loudest setting possibly going to make you kind of relax or want to dance? You know, you have to be careful. But I think being relaxed as possible will really help you in your radiotherapy. And it's easy to say that when you're not having to go through it yourself. But, you know, think about things that are going to make you feel good. And I would also say, please get someone to drive you if you can. Because although the appointment is really short, sometimes you're in that waiting room for long periods of time and it can be lonely. And also parking, traditionally at a lot of oncology centres, is challenging. And the stress of parking, you know, the amount of patients I used to see coming in sweating, you know, really stressed, highly anxious, nothing to do with their treatment, but because they've been stressed trying to get there on time. So, you know, use your friends, your family, who all want to help you through this cancer treatment. And we're all so good, aren't we, at going, no, I'm fine. No, absolutely. Can you drive me? That would really help me. And they'll feel like they're helping you as well.
That's a brilliant tip. I think I would say I was really scared because it was fear of the unknown. What will it be like? How long will it take? And it didn't hurt. And it did last very long. And the hardest bit was the traveling and being tired and waiting. And actually, it wasn't anywhere near as bad as I thought it was. But emotionally, it was when I just felt suddenly this is real. I actually have had breast cancer. So maybe trying to give yourself easy days, especially in the last week of treatment, because it does kind of kick in. But it's not as bad as you think. And ask the therapeutic radiographers for advice. They will tell you what to do, what to eat, what to put on your skin. They'll look after you. Thank you so much, Joe and Naman, for answering all your questions today. You've been brilliant. I will put all the details to the RadChat podcast and your online profiles in the show notes so people can get hold of you in the future. And thanks again.
Thanks for the opportunity, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
That was Naman Jelka Anderson and Joe McNamara, the therapeutic radiographers from the award-winning podcast RadChat. And there is nothing they don't know about radiotherapy. Every time I talk to them, I learn something new. And I think the takeaway for me is that knowledge is power. Ask the radiographers looking after you about what to put on your skin, what you can and can't do during treatment, and what the side effects are. And I do regular Instagram live chats with Joe and Numan, where we'll keep answering all your questions. And now it's time for the lovely Donna Ashworth to read us the poem of the week from her best-selling book, Wild Hope.
Wild Hope. You cannot tame hope or make it care for fact, nor can you shame hope or talk to it of lack. Hope will listen not to your worries or your fears, it listens only to your soul, to your inner child's tears. Hope will rise in spite of pain, against the storm and quake. Hope will walk through burning flame, quench fire in its wake. You cannot tame hope or make it bend the knee. It grows wild and all around. Hope costs nothing. Hope is free. Simply reach within your soul to that place where instincts meet. And there you'll find this hope, growing wild and growing deep.
That was Donna Ashworth reading Wild Hope from her latest book of the same title. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems or find out about today's guests, Numan Julka Anderson and Joe McNamara from Radchat, or simply send me a question to answer on the show, you'll find all the details in the show notes. And you can also sign up to my podcast newsletter for my bonus monthly tips. If you love the show and have a few moments to spare, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen. Now, next week's episode is all about food. Specifically, what should we be eating after a breast cancer diagnosis? Is there anything we need to avoid? And do cancer diets really work? I'm going to be joined by Claire Shaw, consultant oncology dietitian. And trust me, you don't want to miss this one.
We talk about plant-based diets, and that really is what we should be thinking about. And people probably say, well, what do you mean by a plant-based diet? Do you need to be vegetarian or vegan? You don't.
I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you then. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.